2 FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on, weeknights from 6 on 2 FM.
Thanks to Roz and Emma, it's Tuesday the 28th of June and this is Game On. Coming up today, we get the word on the ground in New Zealand on the eve of Ireland facing the Maori All Blacks.
It's everything to these players that are taking the field on Wednesday. It's the biggest game of their lives, though, you know? It is. And I know there's a three-game series coming up, but these two Maori games for us and what we're trying to build and how we're trying to put people under pressure and see how they come through that is just as important. If I can say it that way, I think that speaks it all, really.
In golf, we catch up with Olivia Mahaffey on her pro career so far and an exciting summer ahead. In cricket, we're live to a sold-out Malahide as India's superstars are in action against Ireland. Plus, what next for Owen Morgan after his England retirement? And we're live to Switzerland as Stephen Kenny keeps an eye on our first team at UEFA's Unity Euro Cup. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Now, welcome along. We are going to start today's show with rugby because there is plenty of it. We now know who our provinces will face in the Heineken Champions Cup group stages after the draw was made today. So Munster will face Toulouse in next season's group stage. The sides met earlier this year in the quarterfinals, which resulted in the French team advancing following a penalty kicking competition. There's a lot of them lately. Both clubs will be in Pool B next season, with Northampton also their opponents. Meanwhile, Leinster will be in Pool A with Gloucester and Racing 92. Ulster will meet champions La Rochelle, and Sale are in, they're all in Pool B. And then in Pool A of the Challenge Cup, Connacht will play Brive and Newcastle, and Ulster forward Ian Henderson is out of Ireland's tour of New Zealand. Henderson has a knee injury. Bundy Aki will captain Ireland in their first game of the tour against the Maori All Blacks in Hamilton tomorrow, with five uncapped players included in the visitors' starting lineup. There is a lot happening in New Zealand when it comes to those games that are going to be taking place over the next few weeks, with all three tests against the All Blacks live on 2FM on those Saturday mornings. Well, to fill us in on the lie of the land down in New Zealand, I spoke to Keane Tracy of the Irish Independent a little bit earlier, and I just started by asking him to tell us all about what's been happening down there.
Game on. Rugby.
There is, Maria. It's the first day of the first test, or the first day of the first test week yesterday, yeah, and it was like one of the busiest days that I can remember in a long time. But look, I mean, this is what it's all about, isn't it? It's, you're kind of still trying to juggle the two time zones. I left Dublin, what was it, last Wednesday, got to New Zealand on Friday, and it's Tuesday now, and I'm still trying to figure out kind of what day of the week it is when you wake up. But it's great. It's been great to be here. I've never been to New Zealand before, so I've been really excited to kind of see what it's all about. And you know, the first few days, it was nice to come that bit early because you kind of ease yourself into it, but it really feels like it's ramping up now. We've got the Maori game tomorrow, and obviously then the first test is Saturday, so it feels like it's all starting to get real now.
Yeah, it was a little bit low-key maybe when the squad left and then the journalists left, but the last 24, 48 hours now, there's a huge amount of attention, and the main reason for that attention is Joe Smith now stepping into a coaching role in New Zealand, and people are absolutely fascinated by it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously not at home, but like just from reading online and chatting to different people in WhatsApp groups and stuff, it seems to be it seems to be all that people want to talk about. And it's certainly the same over here, probably for different reasons, I would say, is why it's the talk of the town. Because, you know, Ian Foster, the All Blacks head coach, is coming into this series under an awful lot of pressure. I mean, he wasn't the most popular choice when he got the job in the first place. A lot of people would have preferred Scott Robertson, the Crusaders coach, and even Joe Schmidt as well. And now that he's been struck down, him and his two assistants, John Plumtree and Scott McLeod, that they've been struck down with COVID, Joe Schmidt has obviously come in, and it feels like a bit like it was written in the stars, really, doesn't it? I think, you know, Joe Schmidt wasn't supposed to start I think it's an independent selector was his official title, but he wasn't due to start it until after the tour. But I don't know, I have a funny feeling that within the Irish coaching setup, I don't think anyone was expecting him not to have some sort of influence now, albeit maybe not as obvious as this, but I mean, I'm sure you guys and everyone listening have seen the pictures of him in his all black gear in on the training pitch today, and he looks so refreshed. And yeah, it's like I can imagine a lot of Irish supporters will have mixed feelings about it. And you know, like Andy Farrell was up at a press conference at our time this morning, just after he named his team, and like obviously downplaying kind of, you know, the idea of himself and Joe Schmidt going head to head. But I don't know, it's a really fascinating thing from a supporter's point of view, from a media point of view, because when you think about it, there's no coach outside of Ireland that knows Irish rugby better than Joe Schmidt. I mean, the Ireland team has changed a bit since he left after the 2019 World Cup, but you've still got guys like, you know, Tadhg Furlong, Johnny Sexton in particular, because you think back to when Joe Schmidt was in charge, everyone used to say that Johnny Sexton was basically Joe Schmidt's brain on the pitch. Like he knows, I would say that there's no coach that Johnny Sexton has worked with that knows him better than Joe Schmidt. So it's fascinating. I think the All Blacks would have been mad not to tap into Schmidt's insight into Ireland. And now the fact that he's kind of been running the training session today, Tuesday, and he's going to do it on Thursday as well. So it'll be fascinating to see if he's in the coach's box. There's been no kind of clarity in terms of when Ian Foster actually tested positive, because I think the protocols over here are you have to isolate for 7 days. So we don't actually know when he tested positive. So it'll be very interesting come Saturday morning, Irish time, if you see Joe Schmidt in the press box or not. But it certainly adds another layer of intrigue to what is already like a fascinating series.
I did get a giggle reading your piece from that press conference with Andy Farrell saying that himself and Joe Schmidt were supposed to meet for coffee on Thursday, but he's not sure if that's going to happen. Now, you're going to have to keep us up to date on that.
I know. Yeah, it reminded me of Ronan O'Gara at the Champions Cup final a few weeks ago had texted Johnny Sexton asking to meet up for a coffee, but Johnny Sexton politely declined. So it seems like Andy Farrell and Joe Schmidt had this organised to meet up on Thursday a couple of days before the first test match. But I don't know, I would love to be a fly on the wall for the conversation if it happens, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're keeping their distance given what everything that's happened in the last few days.
Yeah, and look, there's a lot at stake as well here, and there's a lot at stake for both of them now, because it seems that just given the fact that Joe is set to step into a role and has now stepped into a role, like I'm sure he wants the job, Cian. What do you reckon?
Yeah, like it's hard to know. I mean, like when he left Ireland, you know, he had good family reasons for doing so, but he had the world rugby gig. But I mean, like a guy like Joe Schmidt and a brain like his is wasted unless he's not on the training pitch, you know, with a whistle around his neck. He's just too good, and like he's too obsessed not to. So I don't think it's a surprise that he's kind of, you know, eased his way back into it. We've seen the impact he's made with the Blues in Super Rugby this season just gone. He really helped turn around their fortunes. They got to the final a couple of weeks ago. They lost to the Crusaders, Scott Robertson's Crusaders, but he made a massive difference, and the players have spoken about that as well. And he'll know everything. Like stepping into the All Blacks setup now this week, he will know everything about every player in terms of their form, in terms of their strengths, in terms of their weaknesses. So like, I would be shocked if he didn't want the head coach job, but I mean, I would imagine he'd want it when the time is right. So you think about it, like we're only just over a year out from the World Cup, but if this series doesn't go well for New Zealand, the pressure on Ian Foster is going to be absolutely enormous. And you can sense it over here that it is already mounting, and it's such an interesting dynamic. So if you know, if New Zealand were to lose this week and Ian Foster is back, you know, people will be blaming him. But then if New Zealand were to win against Ireland on Saturday comfortably, then people could say, well, Joe Schmidt kind of stepped into the breach there and ran training sessions. So I really think Joe Schmidt is in a win-win situation, if you know what I mean, this week. Like he can't really lose no matter how the result goes on Saturday. So I don't think if New Zealand were to have a poor series against Ireland, and like it's worth mentioning as well that their next two games after they play Ireland are South Africa. They're going to play South Africa twice away from home. Like if those games go poorly, I don't think it's inconceivable that the All Blacks might make a change, even though it's this close to the World Cup. And if they were to do so, I think Joe Schmidt would be the one they would look to, because he's been in the system with the Blues, and that is such a key thing with the All Blacks. They don't really like taking someone in from the outside, which is why Joe Schmidt kind of, I felt like, went back into the Blues system, because it means that he has that foot in the door, because, you know, you follow the kind of the Kiwi culture. So the fact he's done that, the fact he was lined up to take on a role after the series, to me always felt like he was going to be there in case, like break glass in case of emergency. which is exactly what we're seeing now. Like, I mean, no one could have predicted that three of the All Blacks coaches would have went down with COVID this week, but what a guy to be able to call upon. And yeah, like I said, he is going to have a serious insight into this Ireland team. And I think, you know, I think the coaches will be a bit on edge. I mean, Andy Farrell was speaking about it, you know, that Joe Schmidt isn't going out there playing the game. And he, of course he's not, but I think, you know, it will get into the head of the Irish coaches a little bit, just purely because he knows so much about every aspect of Irish rugby, really.
Yeah, it's definitely adds something to it. And I'd say if anybody wasn't going to get up early on Saturday morning to watch it, they definitely will. Let's talk about tomorrow morning's game against the Mary All Blacks. So they have named a really exciting team, Ireland. And the one that jumps out for a lot of people will be Ciarán Frawley at 10. What does this mean that he's gone in there?
Well, first of all, my understanding is that Harry Byrne misses out because he's injured. We got to see a bit of training over the last couple of days, and certainly in yesterday's training session, Harry Byrne wasn't involved. So my suspicion is that Harry Byrne was probably expected to start before he picked up this injury. And yeah, it's really concerning, I think, for Harry Byrne, because he constantly picks up niggles. I don't think it's a serious injury by any means, but he constantly seems to pick up niggles at really, really bad times. And this could be, I think, a real sliding doors moment in terms of the out half picture, in terms of Harry Byrne's career, and particularly in terms of Ciarán Frawley's career, because Leinster have been using him at 12 pretty much all the time. And I think I was looking back at this, I did a piece on him last weekend about his kind of scary roots. And I think he'd only started one game at out half for Leinster last season. Now, when you think about that, he's got Robbie Henshaw ahead of him at 12, and Leinster are bringing in Charlie Nattoy, a former All Black, who's a centre as well next season. So the competition is just going to get even more intense. But I've always felt that out half is his best position. But I mean, you'd have to kind of look at like the likes of Leo Cullen and Stuart Lancaster know far more about the game and far more about Ciarán Frawley than I do. But I think it's very interesting that Andy Farrell has looked him now to play 10. I think circumstances dictated in that Joey Carberry couldn't start this game purely because he's too important going into the first test match. Because if Johnny Sexton was to go down injured in early on in the first test, then you don't really want to be bringing on a rookie out half to play the All Blacks in Eden Park. But it's a massive opportunity for Ciarán Frawley to impress. He's a superb footballer. We've seen that even when he's been playing 12, he's really comfortable as a distributor. He steps in at first receiver comfortably. And you know what, Marie, crucially, like, he played all of his underage rugby for Skerries at out half. So it's only in the last few years that he's transitioned into a centre. But it's a huge moment, I think, in his career, because if he goes well, I think the pecking order will shift in Ireland. But I also think back in Leinster as well, they'll be thinking, okay, maybe we need to look at him as a realistic, I think, backup to Johnny Sexton. I mean, That's one of the most interesting kind of topics of conversation around this tour, is that can Joey Carberry close the gap? Can Harry Byrne step up? But I think if Ciarán Frawley goes well tomorrow against the Mary All Black, you're going to see this guy, I think, push on even more, because he's robust, he's physical, he's a really strong defender. He has a lot of similarities, I would say, to Johnny Sexton. So just like the other four uncapped players that are going to get their chance against the Maori, it's a massive chance to stick their hand up for what is a long road ahead. We've already seen guys pick up a couple of injuries, so you never know when the door is going to open.
Yeah, we saw Ian Henderson ruled out of the tour now with a knee injury. I know you were at the training and you saw him quite bandaged up, and it looks like he's done a significant amount of damage to that knee.
Yeah, so he's on his way home. Unfortunately, he's going to be heading home the next day or two. He was sitting out training, obviously, today, and his knee was in a knee brace, so it didn't look good for him at all. Ireland had a big training session last Saturday, and by all accounts, it was seriously, seriously intense. They were trying to shake off the cobwebs, and I think some innocuous incident during that session. And yeah, it's clearly serious enough to rule him out of the tour. And I think he's going to go back home to have further kind of consultation to see how serious it is. And he's another guy who just can't really catch a break. And I actually think he's a massive loss as well. He's a big game player when he plays. He rarely lets Ireland down. He's the Ulster captain, unbelievably experienced. you really want guys like that going into the trenches when you're playing New Zealand over here. So yeah, I think that's a massive loss. I think both for Ireland, but both for Ian Henderson personally as well. And it has knock-on effect. I think I wouldn't have been surprised if Ty Byrne had been kind of slated to be involved in the Maori game, but with Ian Henderson gone again, like, you just can't afford to play Ty Byrne in this game, because I think he becomes even more important now for the first test. And like, Ty Byrne hasn't played since the Six Nations. It's an awful long time. So it would be a risk to throw him straight back in. That's why I think Andy Farrell would have been keen to give him a bit of game time just to kind of, you know, get the legs moving again. But Henderson's injury means you don't really have that kind of room to manoeuvre, I think, anymore. And I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Ty Byrne start the first test now alongside James Ryan in the second row.
So, Cian, you left Ireland last Wednesday. You got to New Zealand on Friday. Today's Tuesday, and it took you till now really to try and get to grips with the time zone. So Niall Scanlon has just landed and he's going to be on the bench for that Maori All Blacks game in the morning for our time. How is he going to cope?
Yeah, I believe he was on his holidays in Portugal, actually, Marie, and got the call. Didn't even go back to Ireland. I think he went back. He flew from Portugal back to London or something and flew straight over here to New Zealand. Didn't even have any gear or anything. They had to organize his clothes and everything to be sent over. It's interesting. I think a lot of people were very surprised that Ireland didn't bring four hookers out here in the first place, because it was always a risk that for such a specialized position, if one of the hookers went down, it was going to really back yourself into a corner. And this goes back to my kind of earlier point. The injuries for players who are going to be involved in the Maori game has such a knock-on effect for the test series, because, again, you couldn't afford to have Dan Sheehan involved in the Maori game, because he's now become Ireland's first choice hooker with Ronan Kelleher out injured. So if you think, if Dave Heffernan had started, well, he is starting the game tomorrow, but if he had went off injured early and Dan Sheehan comes on and then picks up a knock as well, I mean, that could be curtains for Ireland's chances to be going that, I think, that far into the depth chart in hooker in a test series. So, interesting, Niall Scannell hasn't played for Ireland since the 2019 World Cup. I think I'm right in saying that he hasn't featured in an Ireland squad under Andy Farrell at all, apart from one of those kind of Christmas stock takes that they do. Not really an official squad. So he's really come in from out of the blue, you'd have to say. But I mean, you're talking now, you're down to like, you're nearly your fifth choice hooker. So like, a ball hasn't even been kicked on the tour yet, and you're already digging that deep into the depth chart. So I would fear that there's going to be more of this in certain positions, that by the time the third test is over, the amount of players I think that are going to be used, there's 40 here at the moment, 41 if you still want to include Ian Henderson. But I think there's going to be guys who are still back home in Ireland are going to end up back out here at some point for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like it's heading that way. All right. And New Zealand then, COVID is in the camp, and it's nearly with every passing day, it seems to be another person is affected. So far, how's their squad looking, and is there much talk about it, and how worried are people over there?
Yeah, so it's been strange coming back into, it feels like you're kind of gone back in time in terms of the COVID situation of the country, because I think I'm right in saying New Zealand are still kind of in the grips of Omicron. So case numbers are quite high here, which is, you know, reflected, I suppose, in the All Black squad. And people are definitely more cautious over here than I would say than where we are in Ireland at the moment. There's a lot of mask wearing as you go around the place. And yeah, so it's like they're without the three coaches, like I said, and they're without three Crusaders All Blacks. And Will Jordan is the latest to have tested positive, and he was a guaranteed starter, one of their most dangerous players. So yeah, like it's disappointing, isn't it? Because when we had all these kind of COVID dropouts back, it feels like a long time ago now, because thankfully kind of Irish rugby and European rugby has kind of gotten over a little bit. But it was always disappointing. Like, you don't want to see the best players in the world ruled out of these games. You want to see the best of the best going up against each other. So I would say they are concerned. Like, Mac Hansen tested positive as well in the Ireland camp. And I think there's going to be more tests in a couple of days. I think when you arrive in the country, well, I do know because we had to do the same. When you arrive into New Zealand at the moment, the restrictions are that you test yourself, a lateral flow test, antigen test. That's what we call it back home. They call it that over here. You test yourself when you just arrive in the country and then after day six. So the fact that Mac Hansen tested positive, I presume after shortly after he arrived. So I'd say there's a bit of concern in the Ireland camp. No one has obviously shown symptoms, but you don't want to show up a negative test just before the first test or whatever. So I think that's where the All Blacks are at the moment. There was a concern over another couple of players. Richie Mwanga didn't train today due to, I think he has a flu or a stomach bug or something. I think there's doubts over Jordy Barrett, I think has a calf injury as well. So the All Blacks actually have plenty of like their own concerns apart from COVID as well, because like I said, their back line is what's been really hit hard. So I think it is a concern. They're trying to downplay it in that, you know, we'll adapt to whatever. And it's funny, like I said, or kind of there a couple of seconds ago, they're using all the buzzwords that Irish rugby was using a few months ago, but thankfully like we're kind of gone past that now, but we've kind of had to go backwards to adjust to where New Zealand is as a country. So you'd hope that there'd be no more COVID disruptions this week and for the rest of the tour, because like I said, you want to see the best players in the world going head to head, don't you? You don't want to see anyone missing out for that kind of reasons.
Game on. Rugby.
RTE.
2FM.
Game on.
On 2FM. With Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on. On 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. We are now going to turn our attention to cricket with Ireland in action against India at Malahide in a T20 international. John Kenny is there for us. John, what is the latest?
Well, what a game we're having here. India scored 225 for 7 off their innings when they were put into bat. Winning the toss and decided to bat themselves. And the second week of partnership of Sanju Samson and Deepak Hooda, who went on to make a century, is a world record for a second week of partnership in the T20 International. And Hooda is the fourth Indian player to go on and make a three-figure total in a T20 International. So Ireland are batting now, and they're currently 18 for none. We're in the second over. It's an explosive start as well for Paul Sterling in reply, making 18 from the first over. But it's a huge total that Ireland are chasing down, 225, which would be a record from their point of view. The game against Afghanistan a couple of years ago where they actually reached that target. But this is a higher quality team, India, they're playing against today.
India won that first game as well on Sunday by 7 wickets. There were some positives though, Harry Tector being one. Are you expecting positives this evening, John?
Well, you see, it's all about building up to the World Cup later on this year, of course, because Ireland haven't played that well in T20 formats down the years. So they're facing up to some of the big guns. They've got New Zealand to come in a three T20 series, also one-day internationals later on in the summer. They go to Bristol to play South Africa. They've got Afghanistan coming to Ireland for a series of T20 games as a build-up to the T20 World Cup, which will be taking place in Australia and New Zealand later on this year. So these are the kind of opposition that they need to play against. It's all very well playing against each other, really, in the interprovincial series, but this is the games that they really can test themselves. India, as we know, are most of them play in the international arena in the IPL, the Indian Premier League, and they're used to playing this kind of cricket all the time, and they're explosive and destructive batters. But Ireland are just going to test themselves against the likes of Hooda and Samson as well as they build up to those finals.
Yeah, and there's a new coach in there as well, Henrik Malan. Are you seeing his imprint on that team in any way?
In terms of the bowlers, we have he's given a chance today to Gareth Delaney to bowl 4 overs. Now, he got a bit of tap. He didn't take any wickets, 43 runs conceded. But Andy McBrien, their spin bowler, conceded 21 runs the other day and only 1 over and 16 today. So that's a little concern. But Mark Adair bowled well. He took 3 for 42, came back well, opened the bowling for Ireland and wrapped up the tail, as you would think. But Paul Sterling is looking like he's enjoying himself out there. He's just got himself another six. So Ireland have moved on to 25 now for no wicket. And we're in the, second over. So it's a huge total they're chasing down. But Paul Sterling is taking on the Indian batsman. They need 225 for victory here. It'll be some victory if Paul Sterling can lead from the front and take the win. It's a huge total. It will be a record for Ireland. But they've started well. 25 without loss. We're in the second over.
Thank you so much, John Kenny, for that update, and we will keep an eye on it throughout what is left of this show. Now, Owen Morgan has confirmed today his decision to finish up playing international cricket. The Dubliner played for Ireland before switching to England, and he captained them to World Cup glory in 2019. Let's hear from him.
And I think it's a culmination of a lot of things that over the course of my international career, which has been a long time, I've just come to the end. I'm glad I was in a sound enough space to understand that feeling and be well aware of what it meant and also what it means both for the England white ball sides that I've led until now and me in my personal life. So the day it hit me, it was quite a sad day, reaching the end of such a special journey. But in many ways, since that day, I've been incredibly proud and content with the decision and excited for English cricket going forward.
Owen Morgan there explaining his decision to retire from international cricket. Sean Hussey of RT Sport is with us in studio. Sean, he's been such a massive player for England and in ways a massive player for us as well, because even though he wasn't playing for Ireland, he was still representing Irish cricket in ways it felt like.
Yeah, it's a weird one because from the outside looking in, you'd think Owen Morgan, well, he left Ireland, but to go and to reach the top of the game, he had to go and play for England. So I think what he's done and what he's gone on to do and become one of the best players in the white ball game, he had to do to leave Ireland. And what he transformed that England team into winning the Cricket World Cup is something that will never be forgotten in England, because they had so many woes in the white ball game, and that final at Lord's, where the ground he first went to in England to forge a career for himself, it came full circle, and it was just an incredible day for him, and one that he'll look back on now as the ultimate tale of he was right to go and play for England that day, and to lift the Cricket World Cup, even if it was for England, was always going to be the pinnacle of his career.
Yeah, remarkable, really. And it's quite easy, I think, to understand his decision in ways, because he did reach the very top of a sport that he was clearly so good at and a sport that he absolutely loved as well, Sean. But he seemed to still keep a connection to Ireland as well and to Irish sport, which was quite interesting. And often you hear him going to rugby matches or going to watch the Dubs as well. And sure, look, he looks as Irish as anything too.
Yeah, well, I think that's it for Owen Morgan. You know, when you take the man out of Dublin, you can't really take the Dub out of the man. But it's always a difficult one for him because of the nature of it being an Ireland-England connection as well. You know, he has spoken about that. He came in for a bit of criticism during his time as captain when, you know, at different stages he didn't sing God Save the Queen. Now, when it came to the 2019 World Cup at England, he did sing it. So at different stages, you know, maybe the English were a little bit slow to take to him, but there's no doubt post that Cricket World Cup, there's absolutely no denying the success that Owen Morgan had, and he's very much an Englishman now. I suppose that's how they see him, and they definitely did take to him, and that legacy of the Cricket World Cup, you know, cemented his place among the greats of English cricket. And certainly when you think about it, he has to be one of the most successful Irish sporting stars to come out of Ireland, really.
Absolutely, he really does. And I think as well, when you look at cricket, and I think sometimes we forget or we underestimate how popular it is and how big a sport it is and how many people in the world play it and watch it and are interested in it, because it's not one of the biggest sports here in Ireland. But what he did and how he was able to lead a team so full of characters as well and landmines in ways as well, because there is so much focus on cricket in England and cricket worldwide, and to be able to pull everyone together and to pull that off is pretty phenomenal too.
Yeah, well, he was captain for the World Cup in 2015, and they had a group stage exit, and that became the catalyst for the change. The following summer, they played New Zealand in a white ball series, and the whole mindset changed. And he transformed through his vision the way teams approach one day cricket. It was kind of almost dying a slow death for a while, that T20 cricket was taken over. But the way his team, with the batting performances they had, and the totals above 350, that just became the norm for that England team. And you mentioned some of the characters. I mean, if you take that England batting order with Roy and Alex Hales was in there for a while, but the likes of Joe Root, Josh Butler, Ben Stokes, they just had a plethora of players who were able to under Owen Morgan, reach the top of the game. And even if you look at that World Cup, at different stages, they all stood up and produced big scores, and they did it in a way that was always match-winning, because the freedom they had to hit the ball for six from almost ball one, it felt like. And, you know, the three highest one-day international scores have all come under Owen Morgan's captaincy, so that's the kind of... that's the way he sees the game. And it's funny because he's talked about Brendan McCullum a lot, who's the current England Test head coach, as a bit of an inspiration, as someone who, the way he played the game was so flamboyant, it was so aggressive, and it's something that Owen Morgan wanted to see in his player. So it's kind of funny how Brendan McCullum, a staunch New Zealander, has just led England to a 3-0 Test win, playing a hard, aggressive cricket against his former country. But that's sort of the mantra that Owen Morgan had, and that's almost his legacy as well, that he completely transformed 50-over cricket.
Is it the right time for him to step away, do you think? Just listening to him there, he seemed quite sad about it, but very matter-of-fact too, that this was the decision and he's made it and that's it.
Well, at different stages in his career, he's had slumps in form. He'd a huge slump in form at the IPL. It was very talked about. It was talked about an awful lot. It's weird timing, considering it's fresh off the back of a series with the Netherlands. In the two games he did play, he got a first ball duck and a duck in the second game, and missed the third game, which what was said as a groin issue. And the fact that it's come, you know, in the summer, when it could have come just before the international summer for England, I think that would be a little... That's an interesting one, and it gives England less time to pick a new white ball captain. But he spoke there about just knowing, and sports stars say that a lot, that it's maybe one performance that, and or they're out there and they just feel out of their depth. And someone like Owen Morgan, what he's given, particularly to English cricket, he always put the team first. He never put himself above the team, and I think that showed with his resignation and retiring from international cricket, because he could have easily stayed on for another year or two, but the time's right for him now.
So you're a cricket player yourself, so you have your ear to the ground and what's happening around here. Does Ireland cricket need him in some capacity, do you think? Could you see him coming back to play some sort of a role, maybe to make up for the years that he wasn't here for?
Well, there's no doubt, I think, with Owen Morgan, there's probably unfinished business here in Ireland. He was due to come back as an overseas player with the Dublin Chiefs in what would have been the Euro Slam a couple of years ago, which fell through. I think it's going to be very difficult straight away for Owen Morgan to come back into Irish cricket. I think there's a lot of things that need to happen that not a promises he'll have to get. England's now his home. He's spoken about that before, that London has become his home. And I don't think the England Cricket Board will want to lose him either. I think when you have someone like with Owen Morgan's cricketing brain, I think they'll want to keep him in-house. Whether they can, I think Owen Morgan, he's got the world at his feet now. He can go travelling around the world doing consultancy, coaching, which is a very lucrative business for him. And he's already tried his hand at a bit of cricket commentary on Sky during the first test of the summer. So whatever he wants to do, it'll be his decision. But I would hope that somewhere along the line, when he comes back to Dublin, that he'll get his hands dirty with Irish cricket, because someone like him is well needed.
Yeah, he's definitely somebody that people will stand up and listen to. Sean Hussey, thank you so much for coming in and rounding up Owen Morgan's remarkable career. We will talk to you again very, very soon. We're going to take a quick break now, though. Plenty more to come, so do stay with us.
RTE 2FM.
On
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on 2FM. 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. So speaking to us now is professional golfer Olivia Mahaffey, as KPMG announced that it will become the title sponsor of the KPMG Women's Irish Open for the next 3 years. The tournament will take place from Thursday the 22nd to Sunday the 25th of September in 2022 at Drumolin Castle in County Clare. Tickets for the KPMG Women's Irish Open are now on sale and can be purchased at www.womensirishopen.ie. Olivia Mahaffey, thank you so much for joining us. It must be very exciting now to have this in Drumolin Castle, to have a great title sponsor, and just the fact as well that it's going to be taking centre stage. Women's sport has become such a big deal and this is very much going to be part of it.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. It's so exciting. I've always wanted to play an Irish Open growing up, and you know, often getting to go and watch the guys play and never having the opportunity was always very, very sad. So for KPMG and Drumolin to step up and host this event, I think it's going to be very exciting. And we've seen women's sport in Ireland, you know, get stronger every single year. So I think it's just at the right time, and I can just see it going from strength to strength, really.
Yeah, and I think as well, Olivia, the fact that we have yourself and also we have Leona Maguire and Stephanie Meadow, we're not sure if they're going, what their schedules are going to be like yet, but the fact that we now have women's golfers on the world stage, people that we know their names, they're out there, they're getting huge profiles, they're doing brilliant things as well. It feels so right that there is something here at home that recognises the sport for Irish women. I know we had it before, but it's been such a long break. Just to have it back again is great, and to have the likes of yourselves just around and out there and flying the flag for women's golf.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when I was growing up, I was always looking up to the guys. So, you know, in the last number of years, to have girls to look up to that are, you know, kind of paving the way is very exciting. And I know the girls behind us coming through, there's some tremendous talent. So I really do think that, that kind of the floodgates are open. And, you know, in the coming years, there's going to be even more of us out there. And it just, you know, coincides very, very well to have our own event in Ireland. And I think it's so exciting.
So tell us about the year that you've had. It's been a bit of an up and down one, and I know that for yourself, there's probably been a few mistakes along the way with just scheduling and things like that. And it sounds like, Olivia, you've learned an awful lot over the last while.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's my first full year as a pro, first year, you know, kind of doing a schedule. And I turned pro in the middle of last year, and obviously it's very different when you're on invites and you're playing kind of what you can, but there's still a lot of weeks off in between. So, you know, I wanted to play as much as possible. And I actually began my season quite late, and, you know, you feel so recharged. You just come off season, you feel so good. And, you know, I decided that I was going to do 8 weeks in a row. And, you know, then I took a week off and I did another six there. So I think I pushed myself a little bit too hard, not really physically, but more just mentally. I didn't really think of the implications that it would have. And I felt like it all just kind of caught up on me. So I've took the last 2 weeks off, been at home, which has been lovely, and just kind of really reset and get ready to go again on Sunday. So I think, you know, first year, you're obviously going to make mistakes and you obviously have to learn a lot. So, you know, I feel very fortunate that I've learned it quite early on, and definitely make some changes going forward now for the rest of the season.
Yeah, there's a lot to be learned, all right, I can only imagine. What's the life of a professional golfer like? It looks like it's glamorous and fun, and, you know, we see mostly the good moments, but what's the reality of it like?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's so many things you don't really forget about, but people forget about, you know, they see the top players in the world and they've got their private jets, and it's not like that, you know. It's a lot of, you know, a lot of travel, a lot of hotel rooms, missed a few flights, you know. It's a lot more stressful, the logistics of it all, and, you know, especially when you're on the road for a long time. But I mean, it's a lot of hard work, a lot of dedication, a lot of sacrifice, the same with of any sport really. But I definitely think there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that people don't really see or they don't realize with professional sport.
Yeah, it does seem like there's an awful lot more to it than what we see. All right, and what's the competition like, and do you feel like, I know you're learning about things off the course, but on the course as well, how do you feel you're evolving and adapting to the environment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I actually think, you know, the simplest thing in professional golf is just hitting the ball. It's the same as what you've done as an amateur. It's just kind of quieting down all the other noise and just focusing on being out there and playing. You know, I think obviously it's a jump to go from amateur golf to professional golf. There's a lot more depth out there in the fields and a lot of amazing players. But, you know, I had kind of a good start to the season. I felt like, you know, had a couple top tens, and you know, I felt I had the opportunity to be in contention, so that was nice. And you know, the last few weeks haven't been as good, but I think knowing that you're able to compete out there is very nice, and you know that there's going to be ups and downs in any professional sport, so but you know, it's there and you're able to compete, so that's kind of a nice feeling as well.
Yeah, and it must be quite interesting as well. Like, as you mentioned, you had those top 10 finishes, and then there was a few missed cuts along the way as well. But when we're looking at the top golfers in the world, they go through the highs and the lows and the slumps and the exact same. It almost just everybody kind of mirrors each other at some stage, and be able to see that and know that as well. And as you said, the fact that you know that you can compete, that the bad days or the missed cuts, they must be easier to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just really being consistent and sticking, you know, to the same kind of processes. I mean, you know, mentally I felt like I let little things creep in, you know, in that kind of tough stretch I went on, and you know, I got out of the routines that I was in and the way that I went about things. So I think sometimes you have to pull it back and reset, but you know, everybody goes through ups and downs, and I just always think, you know, when you're playing well, you really have to make the most of it and capitalize on it. And you know, it's such a crazy game where you can go out one day and you can play so well, and the next day you feel like you can't even hit the ball. So there's definitely a lot of ups and downs with it.
So what are you doing now this week to recharge and to switch off a little bit? Or do you even switch off?
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard. I really struggle to switch off. You know, like, you know, golf is always there. People always want to talk to you about golf. And it's actually very nice. My best friends at home, they don't really know anything. They actually never asked me anything about it. They just said, did you have fun? Where did you travel to? Was the country nice? You know, which I think is really nice. You know, I think it takes you away from it. And I think it's so hard switch off as a professional athlete. And you know, I try to spend a lot of time with my family, my friends. When I'm at home, I catch up. I've taken a few days off away from the clubs, and then you know, give myself time to kind of think of a plan. So I tried to do that most of last week, and then this week I'm full training mode, getting ready to leave again on Sunday. So I feel like it's just all about planning, but then also finding the balance to, you know, feel like you're a normal human being and be with your friends and that side of things as well.
So do you feel that you're on the right path, that you have, you're going where you want to go, and you're happy with what you're doing, and you know, do you have goals, and what's the plan for the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm committed to playing on the Ladies European Tour for this full year. I kind of wanted to stay close to home for this year and be able to spend my off weeks in Ireland. I've spent the last 5 years out in Arizona in college, so it's very nice for me to be at home in the off weeks. But yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of goals and like for myself that I set with the team around me. But you know, a big thing for me this year is definitely learning. I just think, you know, when you're making the leap into a completely different, you know, now doing this, you know, as my job, it's not for fun, it's not, you know, with my friends, it's not socially anymore. I think, you know, you have to be a little bit easy on yourself, and I am guilty of being extremely hard on myself. So I think a big thing for me is learning this year. But I mean, I'm also there to compete. I want to win. That's definitely a big goal of mine. And yeah, I'm obviously going to go to Q School at the end of the year, and getting my card out in America will be something that I'm aiming for.
Oh, brilliant. And the Irish Open then coming up around the corner as well, just to compete in that, and to have it in Dromoland, and to have a big sponsor as well. I think that's hugely important with KPMG coming on board.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, KPMG do so much for the women's game. It's incredible, and it's very, very exciting to have, you know, a sponsor step up and take this on. And obviously at Dromoland as well, it's incredible. It's so exciting. I mean, I love competing at home. I got to do it a couple times as an amateur, Curtis Cups and that sort of thing. So I mean, to get to compete at home, I always say there's nothing like it. Like, there's just a different buzz. I just think that people in Ireland love golf so much, and there's always bigger crowds than anywhere else we play. So I'm very excited to have, you know, to be able to play this and have my family there and friends watching. That's always very special.
Yeah, and it's a lovely course as well, and a lovely hotel there, and It'll be a fantastic event, no doubt, as well. Olivia Mahaffey, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you enjoyed the few days off, and best of luck over the next few months as well. Hopefully we'll get to talk to you soon. Looking forward to following your career as well. You've been a joy so far anyway, and you're only getting started.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. Myself and Sean Hussey are here. When we were watching Ireland versus India in the second T20 International, enjoying Paul Sterling and his capabilities with the bat, but Sean, it's all gone wrong.
Yeah, he's just got out there for 40 off 18 balls, but you'd hope for an Ireland point of view, it's been a very productive power play, getting to 72 for one, getting ahead of the rate. Like him alongside Andrew Balbirnie as well. Yeah, just a little bit disappointing for Sterling. He just got bowled to the leg spinner. Very brave of India to bring on the spinner in the power play, the final over of the power play. And there was an appeal for LBW just before the ball, before he got out. But just a little bit disappointed for Sterling because he was in. And normally when Paul Sterling gets in, he's hard to catch. And you do feel like if he'd just taken it a little bit deeper with him and Balbirnie, just tip it over for a few overs, because we don't bat that deep. I know Gareth Delaney's come in next and we have Harry Tector to come, but it's not the longest batting order for Ireland. So it's just a little bit disappointing. It's not the best timing, but him and Balbirnie have given us a chance.
Yeah, and the issue is, though, that they're really up against it, and it is India, and they have a huge number to chase down.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to try and chase 226 is not easy, especially against an Indian attack. And India have just brought on Umran Malik, who's one of the fastest bowlers in the world in only a second game. So that's the kind of strength and depth India have. I mean, they're missing a lot of their main stars, but because of the IPL, because of the strength and depth in it, they've just got an array of players that are able to come in. And that's just something that Ireland naturally, you know, with the population we have compared to theirs, we just don't have that ability and that luxury.
And as the order goes on as well, I'd imagine that the experience won't be there, the experience that you need to go and face off against a team like India.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, when India come to town, it's a whole different ball game. The fanfare that they bring, you know, Malahide is sold out, but if you've ever watched India play live, the noise that the fans generate, it's just so different to what these guys will be used to. And in Gareth Delaney coming in now, he's at the crease. He's an extremely talented player. We've seen it for Ireland in the past, but it's a very difficult ask. Tector to come, Lorcan Tucker, then Dockrell and Adair, and then some of the bowlers. So it's going to be very difficult for Ireland to chase it. But if they do it, it'll be their highest ever chase, and it'll be an amazing victory over India. But I think it's looking unlikely now that Sterling's out.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. All right, Sean, thank you for that. And just before we finish up, a little bit of football transfer news. So former St. Patrick's Athletic defender Luke McNally has joined Vincent Company's Burnley in a transfer worth up to €2 million. A very well-known player here in Ireland, Republic of Ireland underage player as well, and somebody that seems like he has a bright future ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And as a defender, no better man to learn off than Vincent Kompany. It's going to be an interesting move there, because obviously Nathan Collins has been someone who's really impressed us with Ireland and also with Burnley. So Luke McNally may well be opening the path for Nathan Collins to move on, but that's something we'll certainly keep our eye on.
Yeah, and Mark Travers as well is staying put, long-term deal.
Yeah, exactly. And he just shows us how good our goalkeepers are. All three are now at Premier League clubs. Obviously, Kelleher is going to be number two, and it'll be interesting to see how Bazunu starts the season, whether he's number one. But there's no doubt Mark Travers is Bournemouth's number one, and he was exceptional in the Championship last season. And he's someone, I think, you know, he was unlucky in that Ireland game he played against Serbia when he was at fault for Mitrovic's goal, where Mitrovic lobbed him. But there's certainly, with his talent, that it's so hard for him to get back in the Ireland side, but you think playing week in, week out in the Premier League will give him a chance.
Yeah, Yeah, it is really hard, isn't it? And especially with Bisounou on the move, and, you know, we're kind of a bit of on a watch and wait brief with Keller as well. But as you said, it is great to have so many goalkeepers playing at the top level. We can't ask for any more than that. Well, maybe if we could just ask for a few of our strikers to get a few more goals, that would help as well. But sure, look, we have to start somewhere. Sean Hussey, thank you so much for coming in to the studio. That is all we have time for this evening. We weren't able to make connection with Jonathan Tormey at the UEFA United Euro Cup, but we will hopefully sort out the gremlins in the system and chat to them on Thursday, because it is a fascinating story and one that is definitely worth telling. We will be back tomorrow looking ahead to the Camogie and the ladies football, and rounding up where those championships are at. But for now, that's us done. Tara Kumar is up next.